Good morning. The house will come to order. We're going to do things slightly differently this morning, colleagues. We're going to begin by introducing and having a motion to bring on to the floor some very special guests we have this morning, former representatives and former speakers of the House, who have served us faithfully and well over the last, amazingly, over five decades, as you hear these. So we need to begin with the chair requests unanimous consent that House Rule 17.01, subsection 2, be suspended to enable this to occur. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The chair requests unanimous consent that courtesies of the House and floor be extended to former Speaker Duncan, Speaker Myers, Speaker Katz, Speaker Campbell, Speaker Clarno, Speaker Lundquist, Speaker Snodgrass, Speaker Simmons, Speaker Minnis, and Speaker Rosenbaum. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Therefore, escorted in pairs, Representative Buckley and Huffman will serve as the committee to escort the Honorable Bob Duncan, former representative, congressman, and speaker of this House, who served as House Speaker for two terms. 50 years ago, in 1959 and 1961, they will escort him to the rostrum. If you look at the picture in the speaker's office of him, he has a nice full beard, which was truly in honor of the centennial celebration of that year. That's why he's wearing a beard. He didn't normally have a beard. Now, Representatives Cannon and Richardson will serve as the committee to escort the Honorable Hardy Myers, former Representative, Attorney General, and Speaker of the House, who served as Speaker in 1979 and 1981, to the rostrum. Now, Representatives Kennemer and Nolan will serve as a committee to escort the Honorable Vera Katz, former Representative, Mayor of Portland, and the House Speaker, to the rostrum. She served as Speaker of the House in 1985, 1987, and 1989. Speaker Katz. Representatives Cameron and Barnhart will serve as the committee to escort the Honorable Larry Campbell, former representative and Speaker of the House, who served as Speaker in 1991 and 1993, to the rostrum. Speaker Campbell. Representatives Wisnett and Stigler will serve as the committee to escort the Honorable Bev Clarno, former representative and Speaker of the House, who served as Speaker in 1995, to the rostrum. Speaker Clarno. Representatives Gilman and Reed will serve as a committee to escort the Honorable Lynn Lundquist, former representative and Speaker of the House, who served as Speaker in 1997, to the rostrum. Speaker Lundquist. Representatives Olson and Barton will serve as the committee to escort the Honorable Lynn Snodgrass, former representative and Speaker of the House, who served as Speaker in 1999, to the rostrum. Speaker Snodgrass. Representatives Greg Smith and Brian Clem will serve as a committee to escort the Honorable Mark Simmons, former representative and Speaker of the House, who served as Speaker in 2001, to the rostrum. Speaker Simmons. Representatives Hannah and Call will serve as a committee to escort the Honorable Karen Minnis, former representative and Speaker of the House, who served as Speaker in 2003 and 2005, to the rostrum. Speaker Minnis. Welcome to all of you. It is wonderful to have you here. We are colleagues reclaiming a tradition of old that has not been done for many years of having a day honoring former speakers. So it's great to be surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses and public servants behind us. The flag salute will be led by Representative Roebling.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing. Our opening ceremony will be presented by Arlen Swire Pinkham from the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. She serves as the vice chair of the tribe. Welcome. Thank you for being here, Arlen.
Nich maitski inashwana kishaya. Ayayat skui. It's a great honor to bring a song to you this morning on this beautiful day. And this is an ancient song to our Creator. A song that wraps arms around each and every one of us during this challenging time. Ayayha.
Be seated. Now we will move on to courtesies. Former speakers, one of the things we've been doing this session is in celebrating our sesquicentennial history is doing daily minutes in Oregon's sesquicentennial history. And in the queue for that today, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's history minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Craig Wolner, Associate Dean of the College of Urban and Public Affairs at Portland State University. Intel Corporation, the world's largest leading manufacturer of semiconductors, is Oregon's top private employer. The company, whose headquarters is in Santa Clara, California, has facilities in 9 other states and 9 foreign countries, but its largest operating site is Oregon. Intel has 7 plants in the state, all in Washington County. With such a formidable presence, Intel's position in the Oregon economy is significant. Its payroll is $1.5 billion annually, and its yearly economic impact on Oregon is about $9 billion. Intel's move to Oregon came as a result of an innovative yet practical nature. The firm was founded in 1968 by 3 scientists, Robert Noyce, Andrew Grove, and Gordon Moore. Within 5 years of its founding, Intel went from sales of $3,000 to $66 million. By 1974, they realized they would have to leave the crowded Santa Clara Valley for a location outside California where the company could grow. Washington County, Oregon, provided the best opportunity for expansion for the rising company. The impact of Intel on Oregon can be measured not just in terms of the company's output. Intel has also been the catalyst for many other high-tech businesses. Intel's founders' decision to migrate to Oregon has proved to be a boon not only to the company, but the high-tech community and to our economy. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you for the courtesies. Boy, we need to have this former speaker here every day. If that clears all the courtesies out of the queue, that is unbelievable. We do have some honorary pages today. Representative Huffman, go ahead. We're not going to hold pages against you. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate that. Colleagues, I'm honored today to have the invocation done by the Vice Chair of the Warm Springs Tribal Council, and I really appreciated her coming up, and I think she scurried out on the West Lawn to attend the flag ceremony. And I'm also honored to have the full complement of honorary pages today. And if you would stand as I introduce you, we'll start with Cassandra Warner, 13 years old, and she's in grade 8 at Jefferson County Middle School, and Cassandra's from Warm Springs. And she has interests that include basketball, volleyball, track, school year, annual club, and her career goals are a marine biologist. Next is Matthew Skanawa II, 18 years old, in the 11th grade. He's from Warm Springs, attends Madras High School, and his interests include basketball. Career goal is to attend college and play basketball. So, Matthew, great goals. Elise Bagley, 13 years old, in the 7th grade. She's from Warm Springs and attends Jefferson County Middle School. And activities include teacher's assistant and Lincoln's powwow queen. Congratulations on that. And 4-H dance group. Career goals, college, to get ideas of what she wants to be in her future. Emerson Culpus Jr., 18 years old, in the 12th grade. He's from Warm Springs, attends Madras High School. Activities and interests include football, track, and band. And career goals, Representative, if you could raise your hand and you'll know who I'm talking about, you'll need to get with this gentleman sometime today, Emerson. He wants to be an EMT and work in fire and safety. So put you guys together. Abby Scott is 15 in the 9th grade. She's from Madras and attends Madras High School. Activities and interests include varsity basketball and student body leadership, and career goals are the medical field and hopefully a physical therapist. Rodney Mitchell, 13 years old, in the 8th grade, from Warm Springs, attends Jefferson County Middle School. Activities and interests, football, basketball, baseball, and participates in traditional activities. Career goals, college, to play basketball, baseball, and turn pro. And I think there's something about wanting to follow in the footsteps of Jacoby, maybe something like that. Next is Julia Begay, 18 years old, in the 12th grade. She's from Warm Springs, attends Madras High School. And she and I are going to work together later today on career goals and continued education. Right, Julia? Katrina Green, 14 years old, 8th grader from Warm Springs, attends Jefferson County Middle School, and has interests in volleyball, basketball, drawing, poetry, wasku dance. I know I got that wrong. I apologize. And again, Representative, career goal is to be a firefighter. So thanks for coming today. Colleagues, please welcome them to the Capitol.
We do welcome you to your House of Representatives. Thanks so much for your service to us and your state today. The clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying the presence of a quorum. Representative Riley. Representative Riley is excused business to the House. Representative Berger is excused business to the House. Excused Representative Tomei and Representative Holvey. Representative Beyer is present. All other members are, and I'm sorry, also excused Representative Van Orman. All other members are present. Messages from the Governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the governor to inform you that he has approved and signed the following bills, House Bill 2079, 5001, 5029, and 5036.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president to inform you that the Senate has passed Senate Bills 326, 637, 728, House Bills 2169, 2173, 3020. Passed the following House bill as amended by the Senate, House Bill 2203. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president to inform you that he has signed Senate Bills 56, 99, 243, 248, SCR 6, and SCR 30.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special orders of business. If we could have some attention, colleagues, the clerk will read the resolution.
H.R. 6, expressing gratitude to former speakers of Oregon House of Representatives.
The question now rises upon the final reading and adoption of H.R. 6. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a few notes before I read the resolution, because and I think it speaks clearly our intentions today in inviting this group of people. But as the speaker announced as they were coming in, I hope people recognize, this represents the speakers that cover one-third of the history of Oregon. We talk about historic moments. One member started in 1959, Speaker Duncan, and that takes us from the centennial of the state to the sesquicentennial. And the only person currently here who arrived with her father at the same time was our clerk, whose father came around 1957-59. So we have at least one person who is here recognizing these people who actually was here watching these people work for those 50 years, and I appreciate that too. They also represent, of the 50 years, 30 years of the speakers that were here during that time. So we have a few people who were absent, but that's a pretty remarkable thing that they're here today. We really do appreciate that as members of the House, because it is on your shoulders that Oregon continues to grow and do the things that make Oregon uniquely Oregon, and each of you had a major part to play in that. So whereas former speakers of the Oregon House of Representatives have continuously answered the call to public service, and whereas these former speakers have dutifully worked on behalf of their constituents, and whereas these former speakers have honorably served the Oregon Legislative Assembly, and whereas these speakers, former speakers have worked tirelessly on behalf of the people of Oregon in good times and in bad, and whereas these former speakers have authored key legislation that has made significant improvements for the state of Oregon, and whereas these former speakers have provided Oregon with the leadership and vision to allow Oregon to develop the reputation of being forward-thinking, and whereas these former speakers have continued their faithful service to Oregon even after completing their tenure as speaker, now, therefore, be it resolved by the House of Representatives of the State of Oregon that we, the members of the House of Representatives of the 75th Legislative Assembly, express our gratitude to the former speakers of the Oregon House of Representatives for their years of service, their many achievements, and continued contribution to the betterment of the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Roblin. Is there further discussion? Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, our thoughts and our opinions quite often are formed by our personal experiences. And today, I'd just like to share just a few personal experiences with you. It was back in 1991, during college, as a student at Eastern Oregon University, I had an opportunity to come to the Capitol as an intern. And then I worked for then House Majority Leader Greg Walden. And during that period of time, for 6 months, I filed bills. And I filed bills. And I filed more bills. And I did that the entire time for zero compensation. And I had people who told me, "You're nuts. Why are you doing this? Why would you give that type of time and effort to filing?" Well, I wanted to learn more about the process. And during that time, there was a Speaker of the House by the name of Larry Campbell. And as a young, I think I was probably 20, 21 years old, as a young man, I saw this Speaker, and he intimidated me. He was this strong man who knew how to run a House floor. At the end of those 6 months, I wanted a picture with the Speaker of the House. And so with my young family, we went into the Speaker's office. "I'd like an appointment with Speaker Campbell." "Well, what would you like to talk about?" "I don't want to talk to him. I just want a picture." And I'll tell you what, Speaker Campbell came out of his office, and he came right onto the House floor, right in front of where Ramona is. And with my family, he stood there with his arm around me and had his picture taken. Speaker Campbell was a leader. Fast forward 10 years. I'm working for the Port of Morrow, minding my own business, doing good work for Morrow County. And Speaker Lundquist, who was my representative, comes to Heppner and says, "I'm term limited. Do you have any interest in running for the legislature?" And my first reaction was, "Are you nuts? You got to be kidding." I said, "No, I want you to think about it." And over the course of 10 months, I had an opportunity to spend a lot of time with Speaker Lundquist. And I had an opportunity to go through then what was a different district, District 59, which included Crook County and Prineville. And Speaker Lundquist took the time to go door to door through the business community with me. And it was absolutely amazing the level of respect those business owners had for Speaker Lundquist. He was a servant. Then in 2001, I was elected to the Oregon House of Representatives, and it was the most difficult time in my life, very difficult time. No one teaches a young man how to come to Salem and be called the Honorable. No one teaches you how to handle having lobbyists come into your office and tell you you're always right. No one teaches you that. When you come from a middle-class working family, no one teaches you how to handle that. About this time in 2001, Speaker Simmons came and knocked on my office door. And he came and he sat down and he said, "How you doing? I know you're going through a difficult time in your life. Can we just talk?" That meant so much to me. Speaker Simmons was a friend. Then in 2005, I was chairing a budget committee, and I was really, really struggling with how to handle a certain piece of legislation. I didn't know what to do. My heart told me to do one thing. The lobby wanted me to do something else. And Speaker Minnis took time and sat down with me, and she said, "Greg, be honest. Be honest." She was an example. Colleagues, today we have House Resolution 6. And as you read through this resolution, it talks about the many attributes of a Speaker of the House. It talks about their leadership. It talks about the good work they've done in this building.
Representative Matthews yields.
Thank you, Representative. It talks about all of those components that go with the administration of being a good speaker. I just wanted to share with you today that being a Speaker of the House is much more than that. It entails being a leader, but it also means being a servant and a friend and an example. Thank you for all you've done for the state of Oregon. Thank you, Speaker Hunt, for your leadership.
Further discussion, Representative Dolan.
Indeed, Mr. Speaker,
Messrs.
Speakers, Madam Speaker, welcome home. Mr. Speaker, thank you for giving us the opportunity to just reflect a little bit on the foundation that others have laid on which we can build the future for Oregon. Behind you all is the mural of Shampooey. We all benefit from the wisdom, the energy, the commitment that happened on that day and in those years. And a reminder that the decision to join the union was won by a very narrow vote. And as we debate on this floor sometimes, we come down to a pretty narrow margin. And some of the decisions we make on narrow margins this year and when you all were serving will end up being as momentous as the decision that was made there on a very narrow decision. And we'll all get through it. As we look on the dais, and sometimes we take a moment, I don't know how many of us do, to reflect on the panels on our desk, the people who have sat in these chairs before us and made it possible to do the things that we can do this year. I hope it reminds us to think 10, 20, Speaker Duncan, maybe even 50 years into the future. What will the people who will sit in our desks and see a little plaque with our name on the side have to thank us for? What foundation are we laying for them this year in this session? The hard work of the session is still in front of us. Speaker Hunt, this is a perfect time for us to reflect on how we make the decisions we will make. Not only what those decisions will be, but how we will make them. Some great examples before us on how to handle tough situations and hold together the institution and hold together the state. I hope we can emulate the kind of unity, leadership, and decisiveness that is displayed in front of us. As Speaker Hunt and I met with the former speakers just before we came out, a few jokes about how things had gone and how it felt to be back home. And I just want to point out two things as I look at this array of leadership in front of us. Speaker Campbell pointed out that he had to come to this meeting in order to find a group in this session that had a majority of Republicans in it. And I welcome all of you. The thing that's really striking to me as I look at that, Speaker Katz, when her picture went up on that board of former speakers, she was the only woman in 130 years. And now look at the leadership that women have brought to this state. It is a fabulous testament to how far we've come and a wonderful signal of how well we will do in the future. Welcome home.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Galizio, how do you vote? Galizio votes aye. H.R. 6, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. I was just telling our former speakers they have privileges of the House and floor, so they may come around and visit you. They will not be lobbying you. or they may stay up here, but they will be around for the rest of the morning. So, again, welcome and thank you to our speakers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Speaker, appreciate it.
Mr. Speaker.
Duncan.
Yeah.
If I have the privileges of the floor, I would like to just say thank you. It's good to be remembered, and even from a bunch of people who don't know me very well. And if you could please make arrangements to send this to the Medford Mail Tribune, would you? I'm sure they'll get lots of letters to the editor objecting to it. And I am concerned that we have received from you, your hand, a dollar. I never have gotten a bribe before. This may be it. And if so, it would be for me to say one thing. Somebody asked and commented as they made their remark that nobody taught him as he came to the legislature to be called the honorable. And I would say that as you look around today at the record of the House of Representatives in Oregon over 150 years, that the answer to that question was not intended to be asked and answered. It was intended to be understood. And if you look around at the people that you serve with, I hope you'll leave 50 years later, come back, and say, by golly, they were an honorable group. Thank you so much for
having
me.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. H.R. 6, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. I think I already said that.
Thanks.
Thanks, Hardy. Propositions and motions.
Thank you so much.
Great to have you here. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 2002, relating to Common School Fund.
Bill read for the first time, is passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 108, relating to the practice of veterinary medicine, requires programs allowing students to diagnose and treat animals to be approved by the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 108A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cowan votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Representative Gilliam votes aye. Senate Bill 108A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 185, relating to State Department of Agriculture agreements, authorized State Department of Agriculture to enter into contracts with foreign governments.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 185. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes aye. Representative Greenlich, how do you vote? Greenlich votes aye. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? Krieger votes aye. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes aye. Senate Bill 185, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 186 relating to the Agriculture Development Division expands authority of Agriculture Development Division of State Department of Agriculture.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 186. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Stigler, how do you vote? Stigler votes aye. Representative Matthews, how do you vote? Matthews votes aye. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Senate Bill 186, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 639, relating to the Oregon Wheat Commission, changes the composition of Wheat Commission and process for appointing members.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 639A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes aye. Senate Bill 639A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Final reading, memorials, and resolutions. The clerk will read the memorial.
HJM 11, urging President and Congress to ensure that revenues realized from carbon sequestration project on federal lands are shared with state and county governments.
The question now rises upon final reading and adoption of HJM 11. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. HJM 11 is based on the reality that when the federal government is properly managing its forest lands, revenue becomes available from timber harvest to distribute, and much of that fund, those funds are distributed by federal law to to local counties and to the schools in Oregon. This resolution acknowledges the possibility that there may be an additional use of federal forests, and that is in the process of carbon sequestration. And that if that occurs, we request that Congress ensure that revenues realized from carbon sequestration initiatives on federally owned and managed forests be shared with state and county governments. And the idea being essentially that this additional revenue stream be recognized by Congress as an item for revenue sharing, similar to the streams that we used to have in connection with timber harvest. And that's all this bill, this resolution, this memorial is about. It doesn't address a number of other potential issues, simply with the issue of revenue sharing. I urge an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, to the memorial. Colleagues, I'm hesitant to speak on a memorial, and especially one that I think comes from a well of good intentions, but I do want to explain my no vote in the committee. Carbon sequestration revenues are, by definition, an artificial creation of a carbon regime, and the goal of such a regime is to eliminate a problem. And the efficient way to do this is to reinvest revenues in further mitigation. HJM 11 advocates a policy that I believe is inefficient and implies that carbon sequestration may be the answer to our county's problems. I believe it is not. County timber payments issues are an issue of statewide concern. My constituents in Multnomah County have as much interest in seeing this problem solved as those around the state, because there is both a direct and an indirect connection between the health of our rural communities and the health of our urban communities. Essentially, the county timber payments is a four-year ticking time bomb, although in reality, it's a time bomb that's exploding in slow motion. And like revenues from the gas tax or other taxes that are designed to tax revenue sources that are declining, substituting one time bomb for a slower exploding time bomb is not the answer. We need a real solution for our counties. We need jobs, and we need to confront climate change, and this memorial does neither well. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Representative, is there anything in this memorial that encourages carbon sequestration in our federal forests in lieu of timber harvest in our federal forests?
Thank you, Representative. That's an excellent question. In fact, we had testimony that suggests the opposite. The reality is that a healthy forest which is not overstocked with combustibles and which is managed appropriately will actually do a better job of sequestering carbon than the forests that we have now, which have been very badly managed at the federal level, which have not been producing either timber or any of the other values that federal forests are supposed to be managed for. A properly managed federal forest will not only produce timber, but will also do a better job of sequestering carbon. So, in fact, these are not exclusive issues. They, in fact, are additive.
Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the memorial.
To the memorial.
It makes me feel warm inside to hear the good chair of the Revenue Committee talk about logging in Oregon and encouraging the federal government to allow us to take greater advantage of the wealth that this state's been blessed with. It's a great memorial. Should pass a draft vote.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Barnhart, do you wish to close?
Mr. Speaker, I think I'd better not.
Those who are of the opinion that the memorial should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? Krieger votes aye. Representative Gilman, how do you vote? Gilman votes aye. HJM 11, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 326 relating to elections. Senate Bill 637 relating to pest management for schools. Senate Bill 728 relating to controlled substances.
Bills read for the first time or passed the speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 65 relating to school financing declared emergency. Senate Bill 81 relating to performance security of lottery contracts. Senate Bill 117 related to dentistry. Senate Bill 167 related to participation in self-pay groups for benefit plans administered by Public Employees Benefit Board. Senate Bill 218 related to crime victims compensation program benefits. Senate Bill 239 related to notices required for closure to trustees and declared emergency. Senate Bill 240 related to personal information about debtors and declared emergency. Senate Bill 389 related to criminal sentencing. Senate Bill 438 related to regulation of credit unions and declared an emergency.
Bills read for the second time or passed the third reading calendar. Third reading of Senate bills. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 464 relating to recordings groups.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 464. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I assure you I'm feeling much better today. Colleagues, Senate Bill 464 is also known as the Truth and Music Bill. It prohibits the use of a music group's name, unless at least one of the band members is in the group. This bill, you might have heard of it, got a little bit of notoriety, a flash of it, when Bowser from Shawnee came and testified on the Senate. We in the House had to endure just the testimony of Senator Prezansky. Despite that, it remains nonetheless a good bill and passed the Judiciary Committee without opposition. I urge its aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barton, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Bailey, how do you vote? Bailey votes aye. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Olson votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Representative Esquivel? Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Esquivel votes aye. Senate Bill 464, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 558, relating to commercial transactions governed by the Uniform Commercial Code.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 558A. Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 558 comes to you from the Judiciary Committee on unanimous vote following a unanimous vote in the Senate. This bill amends certain provisions of Oregon's Uniform Commercial Code. These amendments to Article 1 and Article 7 have already been adopted by 35 and 31 U.S. jurisdictions, respectively. Passage of this bill will keep Oregon in step with the UCC. I therefore urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Garrett, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? Krieger votes aye. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Representative Bailey, how do you vote? Representative Bailey votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Senate Bill 558A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 244, relating to Oregon State Bar.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 244B. Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 244 also comes to you from your Judiciary Committee with the unanimous due pass recommendation. This bill amends ORS Chapter 9, known as the Bar Act, which deals with the governance of the state bar and the practice of law in Oregon. This bill does two things. First, it expands the membership of the bar's Board of Governors from 16 members to 18 members. State Bar is currently governed by a board of 12 elected lawyer representatives elected by active members of the bar, as well as four public members appointed by the board. For purposes of electing the lawyer members, the state is divided into regions. The statute requires that to the extent possible, representation of board members to attorney population is equal among the regions. Last time this review was conducted, it was determined that the most effective way to do this would be to create one additional region and add two members to the board. Two new board members will be in Region 4, which includes Washington County, and Region 7, Clackamas County, which is where most of the growth in the attorney population has been in the last 10 years. Second effect of this bill is to clarify an ambiguity in the law regarding whether somebody is practicing law unlawfully. With some exceptions, ORS 9.160 prohibits a person in Oregon from practicing law unless the person is an active member of the bar. Recently, the bar encountered a situation that is not clearly addressed by ORS 9.160. Lawyers licensed elsewhere who have established a permanent presence in Oregon who do not become members of the state bar.
This bill clarifies the issue essentially by saying that if you are physically located in Oregon and you are providing traditional legal services, we consider you to be practicing law in Oregon, regardless of where your clients are located. Mr. Speaker, I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Garrett, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Maurer, how do you vote? Maurer votes aye. Senate Bill 244B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. And colleagues, we have been having some problems this morning with the biometric fingerprint voting machine. We think it's been rebooted and is back in service, so feel free to try it again. It has not been working yet this morning. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 5528, relating to financial administration of the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5528. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 5528 ratifies application fees for the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board that were changed by administrative rule in January 2007. The bill makes offsetting adjustments of $20 to in-state and out-of-state occupational therapist application fees so that both fees are $100. The bill also makes offsetting adjustments of $10 to occupational therapist assistant application fees so that both fees are now $70. The net effect of the fee change is a reduction of $3,060 in fee revenue to the board in the 2009-11 biennium. The fee reduction will not affect board operations. The board has an ending balance of almost one biennium of operating costs and reduced its fees in the 2008 license renewal cycle. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 5528.
Is there further discussion? Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, if you'll look closely at this bill, what you'll see is that there's a 20% increase in fees for in-state Oregonians filing for a license and a $20 reduction for applicants who are out of the state of Oregon. And so while we're saving money for those who are non-residents of Oregon, we're charging a 20% increase for those that are residents of Oregon. It doesn't make any sense to me. I think we ought to vote no on this bill.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Gelser votes aye. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. Representative Greg Smith votes aye. Senate Bill 5528, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 233, relating to crime victims' rights and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 233A. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 233A comes to you from the Committee on the Judiciary, where it passed out unanimously. This creates a statutory framework for victims to exercise the constitutional rights set forth in Sections 42 and 43, Article 1 of the Constitution of the State of Oregon. We had several bills over the last few years regarding victims' rights in 2007, we sent out Joint Resolution 49 and House Resolution 50. What this does is just set a framework for victims to be able to exercise their rights. It's a good bill, should pass.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barker, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Senate Bill 233A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 367, relating to Thomas Paine.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 367. Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is a fun one. Senate Bill 367 comes, the sponsor on the other side of the aisle, on the other side of the building, from Senate District 12. And I asked to carry this bill because I'm a big supporter of Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine was very interesting in that, actually, in these times, you have people on both sides of the aisle and political spectrums who support him. He's probably best known for his writing of Common Sense, and which advocated for, Common Sense, the Rights of Man, and the Age of Reason. The Rights of Man was the political tract that was a critique of the monarchy and was instrumental in the colonies and the revolution. Common Sense is strength, and this is something that the representative from the heart of Washington County could really appreciate, was that it was one of the first political tracts at the time that was written for the common person. It was written in a simplicity of style, and he envisioned a democratic society where there'd be no slavery, free education for boys and girls, which was very radical at the time. He was a big critic of monarchy, and he's kind of the forgotten founding father, and that was one of the reasons to have this, to declare January 29th Thomas Paine Day, hopefully to foster some discussion and greater knowledge of Thomas Paine. He wrote The Age of Reason, which was also very radical at the time. It was kind of a questioning doctrinaire beliefs. The thing that I like about Thomas Paine is he's quoted by people on the right and people on the left. Ronald Reagan quoted him in his inaugural address, as did President Obama. So January 29th is the day that The Rights of Man, which was the critique of monarchies, was published, and that's the day that we hope to hold Thomas Paine Day, and I urge your aye vote on this Senate Bill 367.
Further discussion. Representative Weyard.
Society in every state is a blessing, but government, even in its best state, is but a necessary evil, in its worst state an intolerable one. For when we suffer or are exposed to the same miseries by a government, which we might expect in a country without government, our calamities is heightened by reflecting that we furnish the means by which we suffer. Government, like dress, is the badge of lost innocence. The palaces of kings are built on the ruins of the borrowers of paradise. Thomas Paine.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Galizio, do you wish to close?
Mr. Speaker, these are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and sunshine patriot will in this crisis shrink from their service to their country, but he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman, and I appreciate the quotation from the good representative. I urge your aye vote.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlake, how do you vote? Greenlake votes aye. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Freeman, how do you vote? Freeman votes aye. Senate Bill 367, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 5513, relating to financial administration of the Department of Consumer and Business Services and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5513A. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 5513A is the budget bill for the Department of Consumer and Business Services. As you may know, the agency has a variety of regulatory programs, including workers' compensation, Oregon Occupational Safety and Health Administration, insurance, finance, and corporate securities, and building codes. The agency is supported by assessments and fees charged for services, including workers' compensation assessments and license and inspection fees. The department receives $12.8 million in federal funds for support of occupational safety and health programs. The department has statutory authority to expend its federal funds as other funds. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved a total budget of $822.8 million other funds, 1,070 positions, and 1,061.08 FTE. The operating budget is an increase of $10.4 million other funds, which is 4.9% and a reduction of 11 positions to the legislatively approved budget. The committee approved three policy option packages. Two of the three packages reflect reductions due to revenue shortfalls in federal funds for the Insurance Division's Senior Health Insurance Benefits Assistance Program and the Building Division's Boiler and Pressure Vessel Program permit revenues. The third package funds staff and other costs related to finance and corporate securities mortgage lending program. The committee also approved reductions in the essential budget level for the workers' compensation and building codes programs of $2.6 million to reflect shrinking revenues from a variety of fees and assessments due to the current economic downturn. The committee approved agency performance measures, and the Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 5513A.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I don't stand before you to comment on the fee increases, make up your mind on that, but I think it's important that before we vote, that we note for the record that there have been problems with the way our administrative law judges have been treated on the Workers' Compensation Board in recent years. Some judges have been subjected to pressure from management. Some have been punished because they spoke out against the agency's wishes. And it needs to be stated that these judges should be free to make fair, impartial decisions, free from outside pressure. And we should disapprove of any end-run attempt around the current state law, which says that judges only should be terminated for certain things, like official misconduct, incompetence, inefficiency, and such things. This budget will result in notably a couple layoffs, at least. And for me, and I hope the rest of this body can agree, that legislative intent be stated, any reduction in the number of judges should be based on seniority, as that is the only truly objective measure. Experienced judges need to be allowed to decide cases free from retribution and fear that they will be laid off, whether this is perceived or otherwise. Any funds used from this bill, Senate Bill 5513, should be used to preserve and enhance the independence and impartiality of the administrative law judges serving on the Workers' Compensation Board. Thank you for indulging me.
Further discussion, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to clarify that administrative law judges aren't really judges. They don't even have to be lawyers. And if we were to call them by their true name, they'd be hearings officers. I just don't want to confuse them with the great judges we have in their circuit, appellate, and Supreme Court. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close?
Yes, briefly, Mr. Speaker. I would just like to note that this budget passed out of Ways and Means unanimously with only two absences. And with that, I urge your support for 5513A.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Maurer, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Mr. Speaker, request to change my vote from aye to nay.
Maurer changes the vote from aye to nay. Senate Bill 5513A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 5514 relating to financial administration of the Department of Consumer and Business Services and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5514A. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 5514 ratifies fee increases adopted by administrative rule by the Department of Consumer and Business Services during the 2007 interim and which were approved by the Department of Administrative Services. Absent this bill, state law requires that fee increases adopted administratively would be rescinded on July 1, 2009 or upon sine die. Ways and Means reduced the short-term lender applicant or licensee fee from $1,200 to $750 as a result of information provided by the agency that sufficient revenues will be generated to support the program at the $750 fee level. Your Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 5514.
Further discussion, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Could you give us a description of the conversations during committee of the ending fund balance?
Sure, Representative. I appreciate that question. The discussion in committee around the ending fund balance revolved primarily around whether the department had sufficient ending fund balances to support their existing programs and liabilities.
Representative Hammett.
Thank you. Follow-up question, please.
Further questions? Does the carrier yield? Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Could you give us an idea what the specific time period for an ending fund balance, like was it for a certain number of months or what the specifics were around that?
Sure. Generally, we ask agencies to have at least 3 to 6 months of operating revenues in their ending fund balance. And this agency, by statute, is required to have 2 quarters worth of their operating revenues in the ending fund balance.
Representative Hanna?
Thank you. Follow-up question?
Further questions? Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. And what is the ending fund balance, and how does that calculate then for this agency?
They have a very large ending fund balance in the Workers' Benefit Fund. And it calculates that they have about $25 million more than they need to satisfy that requirement. But they have large liabilities that go on into the, you know, future biennia.
Representative Hanna?
Clarification, please. Mm-hmm.
Further questions? The carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. The actual dollar amount in the ending fund balance is?
Roughly $95 million.
Representative Hanna?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Further question.
Further questions? Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
It appeared in the budget report that there was somewhere closer to $580 million.
I'll get further clarification from staff.
The House will stand at ease while the carrier consults with committee staff.
But I will say that the largest ending fund balance is due primarily to the Workers' Benefit Fund, which goes towards paying liabilities. So the department needs to have a large fund in order to ensure that we have sufficient resources to compensate employers and employees.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Colleagues, I want to again point out the lack of conversation and discussion that's happening among these budgets and certain agencies regarding ending fund balances. When a budget bill like this comes to the floor and there's confusion among the folks who are carrying the bill about how much is in there, it points to the fact that we're not focusing during the conversation or deliberation on the bill about how much is in there. You heard just now they have an excess of at least $25 million in that fund, and yet they're increasing fees by 15, 20, and 44%. Colleagues, why do we continue to press forward with fee increases that ultimately Oregonians pay when agencies are carrying what might be considered an exorbitant amount? Most people I know would tell you having an extra $25 million around is a small fortune. And most people I know who, if you said they had $580 million, recognizing the fact that they have cash flow needs, recognizing the fact that there are liabilities, $580 million is a real fortune. Colleagues, I want to suggest that we press deeply in the economic times we're in so that we know fully what these agencies have, what's necessary to cover the liabilities before them, and that those other resources be considered available for use for covering today's services. I'll be a no on this budget, encourage you to do so as well. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Mr. Speaker, I would just like to assure our colleagues that the Ways and Means process is a thorough process. It's an open process, and any member of the Ways and Means subcommittees, and even members, the good minority leader himself, would be welcome to come down and ask questions on any part of the budget that we're putting together. You can look at numbers and you can determine them one way or another. Mr. Speaker, this morning I was looking at numbers and the reshoot for Department of Human Services, the caseload increase that we've experienced the last several months. Well, that's over $200 million. And yes, any family in our state would love to have $200 million. Of course they would. But there are families throughout our state, Mr. Speaker, in every one of our communities who are accessing services paid for by those $200 million through Department of Human Services. So I would suggest respectfully that we don't focus on a single dollar amount hanging out in midair as if it is the be-all and the end-all. Mr. Speaker, the dollar amounts in the budget relate to services provided that Oregonians desperately need. The ending balances, Mr. Speaker, for every budget line, every agency, are scrutinized. The ending balances, if you recall, in the 07-09 rebalance, were swept. And there was a certain amount of confusion, a certain amount of people being upset that some of the ending balances were swept from programs. How dare we sweep those ending balances? How wrong it was for us to sweep the ending balances to balance our budget.
Representative Cameron, for the purpose of you in the privilege queue.
Mr. Speaker, the comments of the Human Services budget are not germane to the Department of Consumer Services budget.
Representative Buckley, the debate is before us. Please proceed on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There were comments during the rebalance about how wrong it was to sweep the ending balances of different agencies. Well, I would submit, Mr. Speaker, you can't have it both ways. You can't say on one hand, there's no way you should sweep an ending balance in order to balance the current budget. However, you should sweep every possible ending balance in order to build your next budget. I think the consistency is important. To strategically look at every agency and make sure those agencies are solvent, which is what the Ways and Means process does, which every member is welcome to engage in, to ask those questions, make sure it's being done properly, and then to also look at what money is available. And I assure you, Mr. Speaker, we're looking at every penny that's available for 09-11. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I think the question before us today is not about whether we're asking to sweep budgets, but the question is whether or not we are going to nickel and dime Oregonians on fee increases that raise $25,000 a biennium when an agency has $25 million sitting in a bank account. That's the question. We're not saying sweep. We're saying stop the nickel and diming. Let's get back to the reality of how much money we have sitting in the bank account today. Then let's work on balancing the budget. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close?
Briefly, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to clarify a few of the comments. As the good representative from Ashland pointed out, Ways and Means is consistently looking at ending fund balances for additional resources to shore up our larger general fund, lottery fund budget. In terms of this particular set of fee increases, I want to point out that the fee increases are only for the mortgage lending services portion of the Department of Business and Consumer Services, and that is only to recover the cost of providing those services. Also, I should point out that the large ending fund balance is largely mythic because this department basically runs an insurance or several insurance programs, including the Workers' Benefit Fund, the Self-Insured Employer Adjustment Reserve, the Self-Insured Employer Group Adjustment Reserve, and, more importantly, the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool Account, which is used to provide medical insurance for the poorest Oregonians. So to think that those monies can be used to balance the budget doesn't make sense. With that, I urge your support for 5514A.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Senate Bill 5514A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Chris Edwards, for purpose... Okay. Now, Representative Edwards, for purpose, you in the queue.
Mr. Speaker, I return to request. Not quite. I request to return to the order of courtesies, please.
Representative Chris Edwards requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Chris Edwards.
Colleagues, join me in extending courtesies of the House and welcoming students from Clear Lake Elementary School in my district. They're led by Cindy Castanet, and I look forward to visiting with you all later, and welcome to your House of Representatives.
Great to have you here. Enjoy your day in the Capitol. Any further courtesies while we're back to this order of business? Back to third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 5527, relating to financial administration of specified boards and declaring an emergency.
As Obi said, third reading of Senate bills is back where we are. Question now rises upon third reading, final passage of Senate Bill 5527A. Representative Comp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good morning, colleagues. Senate Bill 5527 is a budget bill for seven health-related licensing boards. These boards include and regulate dietitians, mortuary and cemetery service, naturopathic physicians, occupational therapists, radiologic technicians, speech-language pathologists, audiologists, and veterinary medical service providers. The boards are supported with other fund revenues from applications, examinations, and license fees. The committee approved a total budget for these boards of $3,976,509 other fund dollars, and it is an equivalent of 16.7 full-time employees. This is a net increase of $467,620 other funds, which is 13.3% above the legislatively approved budget. Most of the budget, and I want to say unequivocally, most of the budget increase relates to workload. It is an additional inspector for the Mortuary and Cemetery Board. The position had been eliminated in the 2007-09 budget due to a revenue shortfall. An investigator position also is being recommended for the Veterinary Medical Examining Board, and that is an increase of a half-time position. The Board of Naturopathic Examiners received funding for a half-time temporary investigator with instructions to report back to us in the interim on their workload. The Department of Administrative Services was requested to advise the legislature on the need for permanent staffing based on that interim report. The committee approved the key performance measures, which included changes to wording and targets. The full Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends the approval of Senate Bill 5527. Colleagues, I ask for your support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Comp, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
No.
Gilliam votes no. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Senate Bill 5527A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 94, relating to fingerprints requested by Director of Veterans Affairs.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 94A. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 94A comes to you out of our House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Services, I'm sorry. It's a bill that came out with unanimous support. We are bringing it to the floor just for discussion because it does involve fingerprinting. This will allow the Director of Department of Veterans Affairs to request fingerprints for purpose of conducting criminal background checks on all agency and non-agency personnel who come into contact with our Department of Veterans Affairs personnel records, financial and tax transactions, business mail relating to the agency and its clients for future processes. This currently they have 111 employees. Those employees would not be impacted. This is from this day forward. It is a way to provide additional security and protection of our members, of our veterans, Social Security numbers, their private medical records, their DD-214, and other military-related records. This is, as they call, a housekeeping bill, but it would grant the authority for fingerprints of all employees coming into contact with those records, and I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Matthews, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. Senate Bill 94A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 141, relating to the regulation of escrow agents.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 141A. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 141A comes to you from your House Committee on Criminal Protection. It is a result of a collaborative working group composed of real estate agency staff and members of the Real Estate Board, 11 members of escrow industry, The members of the escrow industry represent both large and small escrow agents, and some members were part of the industry associations. The proposed legislative concepts were submitted to the Real Estate Board for review, and the board recommended the agency move forward with a legislative proposal. Senate Bill 141A requires the Real Estate Commissioner to establish an escrow agent licensing system by rule. This provides the criteria for an escrow agent licensing system. It requires a fingerprint and background check for initial escrow applicants or upon change of ownership, interest in escrow agent, or for a corporation officer or individuals in charge of the operation. I believe it's a good change. Get some security. Ask your support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Krieger, do you wish to close? He does not. Representative Gelser, are you... Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Senate Bill 141A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 188, relating to penalties imposed for violations of food safety laws.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 188A. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 188A relates to the Food Safety Division of the Department of Agriculture, and it comes to you on a unanimous vote of the House Consumer Protection Committee after passing the Senate without opposition. It authorizes the Department to impose civil penalties for food safety violations as an alternative to the insignificant criminal sanctions, which are currently the only option available. Due to this limitation, right now, the Food Safety Division lacks the practical tools to realistically motivate conformity and discourage noncompliance with the necessary food safety standards that are vitally important to all of us. The bill will create a practical alternative to the lengthy and expensive criminal penalty process and offer a less expensive and less complicated resolution for the agency and the citizens it serves. The division emphasized that education is the most important of several steps before they get to the penalty process. They need a viable option to moving directly to the criminal sanctions. The goal of the bill is compliance with food safety standards. I urge your support for Senate Bill 188A.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cowan, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Voting aye is Chris Edwards, Jensen, Bruin, Kennemer, Maurer, Barnhart, Clem,
Jefferson.
Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Senate Bill 188A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Due to the hour, colleagues, the chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on Friday, May 15, 2009's third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House? Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Colleagues, you will notice that we are having floor session on Friday, but we will have no floor session on Monday. So we are having floor session tomorrow, as you will hear in the adjournment motion, but no floor session on Monday. Further announcements. Representative Maurer.
Republicans will caucus immediately after the session for 15 minutes.
Further announcements? Remonstrances? Adjournment? Representative Nolan, would you make the adjournment motion for 10:15 on Friday, May 15th?
Mr. Speaker, I move the House stand in adjournment until tomorrow morning, which would be May 15th at 10:15.
Representative Nolan moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Friday, May 15th, 2009. Without objection, the House is adjourned.